Come with us for a children's kaiju that doesn't talk down to its audience and has a big anti-bully protagonist to look up to. A return to the magic of the Showa era with a modern style and storytelling. This week, we review the last, though certainly not least, of the Terrible Terrapin series, Gamera. This is Kaiju vs. History, Gamera the Brave.
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your motherless manga enjoyer, Patrick, here, and joining me is an adorable reference to Gearon, Miles. Hey, Miles.
What's up? I am beyond excited to get to this week's episode.
I
think I said at the top of the show that Gamera the Brave was one of my favorite kaiju movies of all time, but I hadn't watched it probably since the movie kind of came out. It had been a long time. And I mean, and I can't remember how long it was till it actually came here, but whenever we got it is when I saw it. I do remember being a little nervous because I decided not to watch this when we started the show so I could be kind of fresh for the episode. And I think I mentioned to you last week that I was a little nervous coming to this because I'm like, I really hope I like it as much as I did when I first saw it, because like I've been telling people for years to go watch this movie.
Yeah. Gamera the Brave. So it released April 29th, 2006. And I think we got it stateside here on DVD just the following year. So you're saying you watched it maybe 2000?
That sounds about 2007 or 8, maybe. It's probably when I got around to it.
Oh, yeah. The Tokyo Shock DVD came out in 2008. So okay. That was probably the first U.S. Release on physical media.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That would probably have been about the time I saw it. And yeah, this is one that I have. Actually, this is the first Gamera movie that I ever actually watched. I had probably seen MST3K stuff because I remember, you know, him, you know, swinging around on the theme song. Yeah. But and for, as far as like sitting down and watching a Gamera movie, this was the first one that I'd ever watched. So I didn't really have a lot of Gamera knowledge at the time. And this movie works even better once you do, but doesn't require it. But before we get down to this, what is in a title, Patrick?
Oh, for Gamera the Brave, a good amount. This movie probably could have been called Toto the Brave, though, Miles. It makes so much more sense because, for the most part, our main protagonist, Kaiju, is called Toto. Like, even when he becomes super kaiju-sized, all the kids call him Toto, and...
I love Gamera as kind of a legacy title for it. So I'm fine with this still being called Gamera the Brave, or, you know, kind of a next generation type of thing. But and wasn't this also known as like G4?
that is a Blu-ray title for the film, because this is technically still the Heisei era of time, even though this movie is not connected to the Kaneko trilogy of the 1990s. And indeed, this is like 7 years after Revenge of Iris, so it's been a while. Some other titles across the world when this came to various places, it went back to Guardian of the Universe in Brazil, in France, in Greece. It translated a little differently. Gamera the Heroic and Gamera the Brave One in Greece. I don't know what this was on, but the literal Japanese title for the movie, Chisaki Yushitachi Gamera, translates to The Little Braves Gamera, and the Russian title was kind of similar, Gamera Little Heroes. And I think
so I wonder if that's a reference to the kids.
It's a reference to the kids. I think it's also a reference to, you know, baby Gamera in the movie Toto, and like kind of growing up and taking on these heroic proportions. Yeah, I think Gamera the Brave, the mostly English-speaking world's version of it, is a very good title. The Little Braves, like Gamera,
knowing what the movie as more of a maybe a kids on bikes approach to a Gamera film, and it being kind of, it feels a little bit more Amblin. And
oh, yeah, for sure.
Gamera the Brave is just a title that feels like this like 1980s kids movie. And this, which is kind of exactly what this movie is.
Well, you know what? It feels, despite us being in 2006, very much like a 90s movie. I was honestly surprised, even with some of like the special effects, that this wasn't supposed to have come out earlier, I guess.
Yeah, I guess the only... Wait, do they even have cell phones? Does anyone have a cell phone?
Yeah, you know, people started getting cell phones early 2000s.
I meant in the movie.
Do they have cell phones? I don't know.
I can't remember if they do
anyone
or not.
With them. Yeah, it just, I don't know. There's something about it. And maybe it's because the other last piece of Gamera media that I watched was Gamera Rebirth, which mm-hmm. is a period piece film. But yeah, this one feels like it, even though this isn't, when we're recording this, this is not even a 20-year-old film. It is
yet
18 years old. But the production for this movie started early enough, they were hoping that this was going to come out in 2005 before it was delayed for a number of various reasons. I think funding perhaps being one of them, but Kadokawa, the production company, had been trying to shop around ideas to bring back Gamera for a little while, including perhaps having Gamera fight Godzilla. Toho declined. They were in the middle of the Millennium series and doing very well, but the original idea was to have this come out for the 40th anniversary of Gamera. That would have been 2005 from 65. And, you know, I don't think it diminishes this movie that it didn't actually happen on the anniversary, but I will talk about it. This feels like a pretty good anniversary film. You know, it feels like something that does live up to kind of the history of Gamera. If you are a big Gamera fan, I can't imagine you're disappointed by this film, you know?
Yeah.
I think if you're only a fan of Heisei Gamera, you might not have a good time here.
Yeah, the thing is like, this is not there are kaiju battles in this, but this is not a Heisei Gamera movie. This is a very different vibe. And this is why I kind of feel that this movie should be a little separated from the Heisei trilogy, mm-hmm. because it's a complete reboot. It's a complete reinvention. I mean, if you want to call it anything, maybe Millennium Gamera, but
yeah,
the only entry, sadly.
That's the thing. Between Gamera and Godzilla, there aren't that many standalone films. If you look at the Millennium series of films, there's actually quite a few Godzilla ones, but they all mm-hmm. came out so close to one another. They all feel at least somewhat, you know, if not thematically, production-wise, thrown together. Shin Godzilla is obviously the main kind of like independent Godzilla movie that may never get a sequel. Now that -1 did so well,
and which is fine, honestly. Yeah,
this movie, this Gamera movie, is definitely out on its own. And yeah, for better or for worse, this is the last Gamera movie ever. So far.
Honestly, I mean, I hope that's not the case. But if it is, I mean, you could do worse. And this franchise has
rights owners to Gamera. You did well with this next Netflix show. I think the owner is still Shochiku owns Gamera still. But hey, you have a full year to get the 60th anniversary movie out the gate into theaters. You got one full year from now. Go ahead. Just go crazy. Gosh, can you imagine if they announced that like tomorrow, Miles? You're muted. Sorry. Nope, still don't gotcha.
How about now?
Yeah, there we go.
All right. So let's get into Gamera the Brave a little bit. This movie starts off in the 70s, in 1973, I think. Mm-hmm. And so we get to see Gamera fighting. They don't ever identify as Gauss monsters, but they look like Gauss monsters.
Yeah, they are. We're supposed to, they look very much like the Heisei version of Gauss.
Yes.
I don't think they are the same miniatures or the same suits that were in the Kaneko trilogy, but they look very similar.
Yeah. So in this instance, we see what we will know as the main character's father in just a little bit. He witnesses Gamera taking on these Gauss-like creatures and sacrificing himself by self-destructing to rid the world of all the creatures and save the people of this small seaside city.
It's an extremely metal intro to this movie. Like this kind of cute kids film. It's got a very dark intro.
It's great though. Most good kids movies have a little bit of that darkness of like even all those Amblin movies that we were talking about, or the Goonies, all that stuff. There's an approach to kids movies that is often lost. And, you know, as we've mentioned at the top of the show, like this movie does not talk down to its audience. And I think that's when you approach something to make a quote unquote kids movie is often when you start to lose your authenticity altogether, as opposed to telling a story with young characters, which is what this absolutely does. Because so we kind of fade to, we see young Kosuke, who was watching Gamera fight. We kind of go to the present day in 2006, and you see the adult version of him looking out at this island area where Gamera sacrificed himself. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he is visiting the grave of his wife, along with his young son, Toru. And you kind of immediately see that, oh, Toru's had to take care of himself a little bit. He's very kind of, I'll say, no nonsense, but
mm-hmm. get a nice little voiceover with him kind of going over his
situation,
backstory, his mother dying in a car accident. And this is like the first summer that they're going to have without her.
I love that we get that.
Sad.
It is sad, but also like he seems to be kind of dealing with it. But you can tell there is a disconnect between father and son. Mm-hmm. We cut to Toru playing with his friends. And, you know, he's not wanting to get wet. He's fully clothed. The other two boys are not. This is actually legit one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie.
It might be mine too, Miles. When I watched it, I was like, you know, this is just really good writing. And it just smacked of reality of how a kid would kind of try and play off, you know, not letting his emotions in the depth of his mother kind of get to him.
Yes, because they're playfying. He actually doesn't want to get wet and starts to storm off. And they mention something about, oh, well, you know, and the kids don't necessarily mean it, because as soon as he says like, oh, well, your mom wouldn't want, you know.
Yeah. Is it going to make you take your clothes off when you get home or something along those lines? Yeah.
And then like everyone freezes because the kid just knows exactly what he said. And yeah. Toru freezes too. And you're wondering that you see his body language slump. Like the kid does a tremendous job of like composing himself physically for the camera, does all of the storytelling with his body language, and then straightens himself back up and turns around. And is like, oh, you thought I was really mad at you? Ha ha. And then proceeds to like get in the water with his friends. And I mean, that scene just breaks your heart.
It's really good. It is the kind of human character like development that you do need. There's a lot of stuff they write for him that maybe isn't as required, but scenes like that, and there's a couple of scenes with him and his father that really kind of give you their relationship very well. But at this point, I don't think you know that these two other kids are going to play as large a part as in the story as they are. You know, they're the other part of the Goonies squad that forms in this film. And then we meet swiftly after that his next door neighbor, who's maybe a little bit older.
She's a little bit older, but like they seem to have like an older sister, younger brother. Like she kind of feels like she's got to take care of him, even though she's got her own stuff to deal with.
Yep. She's got some health issues. There's another great scene here where, she has the latest issue of a manga and like holds it back because he, you know, wasn't being respectful or something.
Yeah, he's kind of mouthing off a little bit.
Yeah. But he obviously is great, you know, just like general scene direction is to give this power dynamic between these two. And then he like comes back. He's and obviously very much wants to read this manga. It is.
I was trying to figure out how I knew her, and she is one of the lead roles in this series that Amazon picked up. It was a Japanese series called Tokyo Vampire Hotel.
Hmm.
And because I was just like, where do I know her? Because a lot of the adults I was familiar with, because I was looking up the dad. The dad was in like four of Takeshi Takano's films, like as a small role. And then he's also in Jew on the Grudge. So he has popped up in things that I've absolutely seen. But yeah, I really love, I mean, again, yeah, I think there are certainly scenes where they kind of overdo it, but I just feel like some of the storytelling and some of the just kind of naturalistic way they display the young characters is some of the best I've seen in almost any kaiju movie with humans.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. I don't know if all the acting is like up to maybe some of the levels we got in the Kaneko series, but I mean, for a kid's movie, this is like beyond the pale, like very good kid actors, both Maya and Toro, especially. But I was going to say, did you ever read Sergeant Frog, the manga?
I never did. I know exactly what you're talking about, but it was
at this point in time, I remember in the late 2000s, it was extremely popular. And I was very confused as to how it was so popular. So this was published by Kadokawa. So this is kind of like a, you know, marketing tie-in.
Right.
I was wondering why they got a very specific manga and showed the cover a whole bunch in this film. Like, it comes back later on, this manga volume, when he returns it to her. It is the 13th volume of the manga, and it wasn't published when they were filming or when the movie released. It came out like a few months later. It wouldn't come out until July, and this came out in April. So they got the manga's creator to draw the cover early and like posted it on an older volume of the
manga
just to have the prop in the movie. And then that is the volume that would come out a few months later, which is pretty hilarious, especially if you're a Japanese child audience member watching this and like very patiently waiting for the next volume of the manga to come out. And they're like, did they just say volume 13?
Right.
Yeah. So I thought that was very fun, even though I thought I recognized it,
but I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was happy to see that I definitely didn't catch that in my first watch through of this film, but going back this time and going through all the details, that was very fun to find out.
We see kind of early on, and there's a couple sequences where we notice that Toro kind of sees this red light popping from the island. And so when they're either, I don't know if it's a recess or if it's just like a playtime or whatever, but all the school children are going swimming, and he opts to swim to this little island and investigate where, and that's where he finds this little baby turtle. He finds an egg, which hatches a little baby turtle.
Adorable turtle as well, Miles.
Oh, the little Gamera they have is so precious, and the little noises they give him, because they give him several animal noises. The little struggling to crawl noises are so cute.
The film had 13 different Totos that were played by actual freaking spurred tortoises. Yes, the Gamera and Toto in this movie are a very different design choice wise from other Gameras. Gamera is usually, I think, more close to a sea turtle. Not color wise, but it's usually a lot darker blue, or darker green colors.
Yeah.
And it's a much more terrestrial looking tortoise in this movie. You know, I always forget what the difference between a turtle and a tortoise is, but the colorations, you know, I mean, if you think of the color of like tortoise shelled glasses, it's a lot more browns, a lot more kind of earthy tones. I like it. I like that they made a bold and different choice. And we'll talk about the Sunimation in a bit, but it really it did get you thinking. I guess if you're just watching this movie for the first time, it's like, oh, he just found a regular turtle, because it is tiny. It's the size of a turtle at first.
And for the next like 15, 20 minutes, we get this kind of cute, almost like Miyazaki-esque storytelling of like, you know, they slowly kind of see that, oh, this isn't a normal turtle. He can kind of fly around.
You keep talking about Amblin. It's very much E.T.
Yes.
The trick. You got to hide it from your parents. And I mean, they never dress it up as a doll in the closet.
But they do cover him with a blanket to move him when he grows a little bit further. But there's a great scene when Toro's, I guess, at school or whatever, and the Toto, the turtle is what he calls it, because Toto was the nickname that his mother gave him. Where the turtle is kind of on its own and has this brief sequence in the kitchen where he's kind of, you know, having this little kind of goofy, your typical kids movie, like, oh, the creature's going to do some goofy stuff. And it sees this knife, which is positioned a specific way so that it looks like gear on. And you see the turtle kind of start to glare and then finally blow out a little bit of fire. It's such a great sequence.
Yeah, it's absolutely adorable. It is something that it really does make me think that this script especially was such a perfect amalgamation of both Showa and the Heisei kind of sensibilities, but also references and things like that. Having it start in the 70s is also a very fun kind of a nod, obviously, to the Showa era.
It makes me think that they were ending the Showa era the way it should have, to them, ended, as opposed to with Gamera Super Monster from 1980. Mm-hmm. And this way that, you know, there is somewhat of a continuity because it clearly remembers the shape of Gearon. That's why, you know, it's glaring. But you can say, oh, yeah, it's got the memories of its previous self, kind of a Mothra situation, which I really do like, because this way that kind of keeps a sort of a continuity. Like, you can say, yeah, Gamera was a thing, because everyone knows what Gamera was. That there's also this like kind of background conversation where you hear that, oh, yes, the giant monster council has been disbanded. They haven't seen a giant monster since Gamera got rid of Gauss. And it's really a good story building, or a good world building.
A lot of great world building. And something else I really wanted to talk about a great deal was the setting for this movie and all of the Gamera movies. In the Heisei trilogy, we got to see so much more of Japan than I would say most Godzilla movies kind of get to us. So in the Heisei series, we get to see Kyoto, Fukuoka, and this one, another kind of general area that we don't see very often in these films. The beginning of this movie is Shima, and I would say the vast majority of it takes place in this like little coastal town. And the end of the movie, the climax, is set in the city of Nagoya. And it kind of has obviously a big city feel, but there's just different locales, different buildings and things from your standard Godzilla Rex Tokyo. And I really appreciate it. I also feel like the slice of life we get in Shima, I mean, it's up there for me with like some Miyazaki films. You know, we get to see a lot of very beautiful locales, just how this like kid operates and goes through life here, you know, from praying at the shrine at the very beginning, which I thought was very interesting, to the restaurant that his father runs. And the Mai's father is a jeweler or a pawn shop owner. And like they talk about how their industry, or the Shima, boomed after Gamera died, because there are all these pearls that are like literally
the scarlet pearls. Yeah.
Which is also feels like a throwback to the Heisei Kaneko trilogy, where they had the kind of mystic stones connected to Gamera. Just everything just kind of works very well. But I really like the setting of this film. I think it's probably my favorite setting of any of the Gamera films.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It really does have that Studio Ghibli, like if they were to make a kaiju film, this, it feels like it would be Gamera the Brave.
And the other thing I really wanted to press upon, I think this movie does better than almost every other kaiju film, is some scenes of Japanese people running away from disaster. It is a standard, I think, in all kaiju movies that you have to have at least a couple shots where dozens, if not hundreds of people are like running away. And the last 30 minutes of this movie are all kind of kaiju action. It's nonstop. It's nonstop, Miles. Supposedly they had 10,000 people apply to be extras for the movie and used about 3,000 unpaid extras. They, you know, were awarded like gifts, like t-shirts and things like that. And members of the press got to be extras as well. And supposedly also got to interview the director for giving unpaid time to be extras in the movie. But yeah, it does a great job. There's a lot of scenes of destruction and folks running away from the giant monsters in this movie.
Yes.
1,000 extras though. I don't know if that's the most in any movie, but it's so much.
Honestly, like the Gamera series did this to good effect in the Heisei era, and other kaiju movies do it, but pretty well. But I'm with you. I love how lived in this whole area feels. And so even when the kaiju you're going at it, you see like different responses to things, it all kind of feels like this is what the response would be. Like even when they're blocking off certain roads and you see Toro kind of running to see what's what's happening. Everything just feels really, it feels like they built like a living, breathing city. It just feels,
yeah,
everything feels like naturalistic in that sense.
There's some great set dressings for the city streets with like destruction kind of rained down on them as well. That looks really, really good. So I'm pretty impressed with a lot of the locations that they pick, the sets. Really no part of this movie feels like it was filmed in a studio. Maybe some of the interior house bits, but I don't know.
So let's talk about our other monster, Zetus.
Yeah. What do you think of Zetus?
I love it. It feels very Toho. Like, it feels like they made a Toho monster for Gamera to fight. Obviously, it's not completely Godzillasaurus X, but it does have that kind of vibe. And then maybe like a little Jurassic Park, because at one point flares up a little Dilophosaurus thing.
It definitely feels like Raptor, Dilophosaurus in a lot of bits. I really like the barbs, the quills that it has. Mm-hmm. It feels a little avian in that way, because I don't know if you know this, but like bird feathers, when they like pop out, are like spines first before they flew
right.
feathers. It's very interesting. And Zeta seems to have bits in different like lengths and sizes. They're not uniform. And then of course he's got that tongue, Miles. He's got a very Showa era gimmick. It feels very much like Jiger's kind of like head spikes that it throws out, or
the harpoon tongue. I mean, like every single Gamera, like you said, a Gamera character has like a gimmick that separates it even from its look. So this guy comes to town, and so little Toto, I mean, tries to grow up a little bit and, you know, defends the city kind of.
Well, when the first time he fights Zetus, he's not that tall.
He's like the size of a normal like dog would be to you or me.
Oh, well, that's when they're like trying to secret him away. But when he first fights Zetus, he's like 15 feet tall, like 20 feet tall. He's not that big, because he gets whooped upon, and then they wheel him out on a flatbed truck in a 5 meter wide prop that looked amazing. They went on to use it for advertising for the film, and I think it was actually some of the first footage that they shot for the movie was just putting this thing on the back of a truck and getting like actual people's reactions to it driving around.
I like this, because I mean, there's a back and forth that consistently happens for the next 20 or 30 minutes where like something will happen. Toto gets out and fights Zetus and then gets wounded or captured again, or something happens. But every single time, it's one of my favorite things about this movie. It doesn't matter how big Gamera is or how badly Gamera has been beaten or cut or stabbed or thrown around. Like, always just like it's about to hurt the kids or it's about to do something, because like Zetus eats people and it's about to eat their little friend. And
very Jurassic Park.
And every single time, like, Gamera pops up at the last second, and I just hear that, like, you know, Randy Marsh, "I didn't hear no bell." Like, because he just consistently pops up after taking an absolute beating. And,
and it's so funny, because it is very different feeling from other Gameras. In this one, definitely still feels like a kid kaiju fighting, you know, like there's some kind of slapsticky elements of the fight. Like when the fight on the bridge is so good. Gamera like rides the tongue up, like gets retracted and like goes flying through the air. Some really fun bits. They did some very fun things when he eventually gets lodged in the building. His little turtle butt is just sticking out the side of this skyscraper. I was like, that is so, I mean, it's definitely nothing we've ever seen before in a kaiju movie. So at the very least, I was like, that is super novel that they did that. But yeah, it is an insane amount of action at the end of this movie. I feel like we get the first fight with Gamera. Yeah, it's at like the 45 minute mark. And the last 45 minutes or so of the movie are just, a continual battle between Zetus and Toto. What do you think about this design for Gamera? What do you think about?
I love it.
Yeah, I don't think it is my favorite by far, but I like that they went in a kind of brand new direction, and it is very clearly a cute version of Gamera. Like, this is still a young version of the monster. The beginning of the movie, we get to see like old Gamera, which is more of a Heisei design, but it is a absolutely brand new suit that is kind of, it looks more like what if this Toto grew up and was an adult. So it's got those same tortoise kind of boxy colors and a very interesting face design.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little softer than the Heisei one. Less of a saw look to him.
Yeah, Toto is like super cutesy looking. It's like what if they gave kind of Manila or Baby Godzilla like the spotlight in a movie.
Well, yes, there is that energy, but like the suit is so expressive. Like in different shots, like they chose a suit that just has a very expressive face. You know, the eyes move and everything. It's a great looking suit. The suit work by both monsters looks fantastic. I do want to talk about like how Gamera gets that way, because we find out that one of these pearls, the last known one, is in Mai's possession because they're thought to be a good luck charm. And she has this heart surgery that she has to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so Toro and his friends are basically risking life and limb. They leave the shelter and are trying to get to the hospital so that they can give Gamera this pearl so that
it can
power him. They don't know exactly what's going to happen. They just know that he needs it.
Yeah. And they don't really have to describe it. It is like children's logic. It's like they understand it's tied to Gamera. And Gamera's not going to be able to succeed without it. And it's like, you just buy that, you know?
You do. Well, because also you see that in the hands of children, it glows. Mm-hmm. And the kids seem to kind of just inherently know. It's a very kind of like a Peter Pan logic. Like you said, it's very like kid fairy tale logic. They inherently know. And they even know his name. It's just like for Toto. And you see like all these kids in this marathon go throughout this great space who are trying to get it to Toro to give to Toto. And I mean, this is one of my favorite things about this movie, because Gamera, like Wu-Tang, is for the children. Gamera is known as friend to all children. But in this movie, all children are a friend to Gamera.
I was going to make that point. Yeah, it seems like, sure, Gamera just loves kids. But yeah, all the kids, I mean, honestly, be real, Miles. If this turtle existed in real life, children would die for how cute this thing is.
Oh, 100%. Like this depicts reality, because kids, and you see kids like
they would risk their life.
Cops, like I oh, like yeah. all these kids have big ACAB energy, and like they organize
this
in real.
Cop is trying to save this kid's life, and he's like, "Let me go,"
and then I gotta go talk
to the turtle.
It's fantastic. And then, you know, Toro ends up tossing it into Gamera's mouth as soon as he's being yanked off the skyscraper. Oh. And then boom, like we get like the classic Gamera spinning, flying stuff. And and then, you know, that's when Gamera grows and you get your it's on fight.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a great actual. I mean, so often in these movies, the kids don't actually have something to do that affects the fight so much. But like, obviously, the kids in this movie, the Goonies kids, are instrumental in helping Gamera survive, and also not have to explode to kill the monster. You know, they all know, like, if they can get the stone to him, it's not going to be like 1973 or 1975 or whenever it was, that they'll be able to save Gamera. And they do, which is great.
Yeah. And you get a really solid fight between Gamera and Zetus. You get there something about the modern age and having, you know, just a little bit more money, a little bit more technology. And everyone just wants to see a monster just throw breath down another monster's throat. Like, it's just something that keeps happening. I'm not sick of it. You know, I feel like, you know, Godzilla 2014 kind of perfected that, but we keep seeing it. It's great. I love it. I'm never going to be sick of it.
This movie has also keeping with tradition, a great amount of kaiju blood. There's so much. Gamera's bleeding green all over the place, and Zetus has like purple blood. When Gamera snaps his tongue off, it's like gushing out of the wound. I was like, ooh. It looks like they stuffed a kielbasa skin, like a hot dog skin with purple goo, and then they're like, let's tear this thing off. What one of my absolute favorite parts of the fight is when the suit actor for Zetus, who we know very well, is Mizuho Yoshida, who we last saw on the podcast playing Godzilla in GMK. So he was also in some of the other Heisei Gamera movies for Kaneko. It looks like a very light suit, Vetus. Because at one point he like kicks Gamera through a building. It just looks so cool. It's just not something I feel like the kaiju are able to do very much, like movement wise. It's great. I think some of the fight choreography here is better than it almost ever was in the Heisei trilogy.
I agree.
which is crazy, you know. I don't think that this movie gets enough credit for that. I feel like when it came out, and even retrospectively, because it has to follow, you know, three near perfect movies, and the last one being considered one of the best kaiju movies of all time, it had like almost impossible shoes to fill. And it's not trying to do the same thing, but it does a lot of stuff, I would say, even better than the Revenge of Iris, you know.
I think that everything about this movie and its kaiju stuff, I think just, I mean, completely works, especially for the time period. And this is a daytime kaiju movie. There's very few scenes at night.
Really, the only one is the intro, as far as the kaiju scenes.
Yeah.
Go, right.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's the only kaiju scene at night. There's some night scenes with the kids and stuff, but yeah, like as far as like Gamera and Zetus, like all of it's during the day, like in yeah, open. Like it's very, very well done. The CGI looks good. I mean, they're definitely stretching as much as they can do at the time, but they are just, I mean, firing on all cylinders. This is the kind of the best a Gamera movie's ever looked in a lot of ways.
And it makes me so sad that this is, you know, also one of the last instances of pseudimation in kaiju movies. We've already had the last Godzilla movie to do it, but this movie, I think more than any other, proves that they should be using pseudimation with CGI enhancements. Like that mix, I think a lot more kind of horror movies are doing that now, you know, partially for budgetary reasons, but partially because the viscerality of having like someone actually in a suit is so important.
It absolutely is.
For kaiju movies, especially because the, you know, miniatures and the sets and things like that also add a great deal to it. Obviously, the MonsterVerse has the budget to like make all CGI monsters look very good. But,
well, yeah, if you got $200 million, absolutely.
I just absolutely love a good suit. And yeah, the CGI, for the most part, pretty good. There's some definite kind of stutters, I think, in their production, but they don't really use, it doesn't feel like they use a lot of blue screen in this movie, which is probably for the better. But the few instances where they kind of like matte CGI into live action frames, like if you freeze frame on like the wreckage hitting that like bifurcates the crowd, where like the one of the Goonies kids is like trapped underneath it, that frame of them it coming in is so rough. It's like, oh, it doesn't even look like this effect was like finished for the movie. But it's like that was like 1 second of the effects. So
yeah, and for the time, it was still pretty great.
I was actually pretty happy with miniature Toto flying around. I was surprised it looked as good as it did.
Yeah, I'm very, very happy about it.
Yeah, for some of those bits, they definitely had a rubber turtle that they use for throwing it around the room and things like that. Right. So I feel like we've talked about this a great deal. We've already talked about maybe some of our favorite scenes here.
Yeah, we kind of already have.
And yeah, also what worked and didn't work. This movie was the lowest grossing of the Heisei era. But like I said, when you're coming off of three of the most critically acclaimed kaiju movies of all time, I don't know what they could have expected with like rebooting the franchise and going in a very different direction. It didn't perform extremely well. And probably because of that, it's why we get outside of a very short film for the 50th anniversary. Gamera goes into a 17-year hiatus after this, Miles.
Yeah, it breaks my heart. This movie was a complete bomb because this movie, we deserved like four of these movies.
Oh, man. Well, that's the thing, and I'll talk about it in a little bit. I think because it didn't get a sequel, it enhances, kind of keeps
that purity. Yeah.
It enhances my viewing experience that I know that there's not another one. Like, and this does work so well as a standalone movie, you know. Obviously, you can franchise this all you want, but maybe because they didn't, this one can kind of go out on top. And the same way that some of the, you know, like GMK is so good because, you know, you just have to watch that and that's it. And you can really enjoy it if you've watched other movies in other series, just like GMK, but you don't have to. GMK is really its own thing and it stands on its own. Let's talk about our personal enjoyment. You want to rate this sucker?
Yeah.
What do you want to start, Miles? You seem pretty positive about this movie.
Yeah. So my enthusiasm for this movie hasn't waned a single bit. I think this is a absolute kaiju masterpiece. I think it's certainly my personal favorite. A lot of people, after seeing the most recent Japanese Godzilla reboot, Godzilla Minus One, they keep, oh, you know, what about a Gamera Minus One? This is Gamera Minus One, or rather a Gamera Plus One, because Gamera is not about that depressive stuff. Gamera is for the children, and this movie remembers that and does so in a way that I think captures what I think they've always wanted to make for Gamera in a lot of ways. Like, this has the spirit of some of those Showa movies, but just with the modern storytelling and the know-how of how to communicate that very well for audiences of all ages. Not only that, it gives us really good storytelling, really good kid actors, really great kaiju stuff. I mean, this movie really has everything I could possibly want. And I think for Gamera, telling that kind of the power of friendship, power of childhood kind of story is so important to the very nature of the character and what differentiates itself from, you know, Godzilla and the Toho monsters. This movie is, I mean, just for me, for the longest time, I remember after this, this is the movie I would suggest to people. Oh, I haven't seen a Gamera movie. Watch Gamera the Brave. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to. Yes. Are there some references? Sure. Are you any worse off for missing them? Absolutely not. Just have someone be like, oh, yeah, that looks like a monster he fought once. That's it. That's the reference. It's nothing deeper than that. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Watch this movie. It's phenomenal. I'm so glad that it's readily available in the States. The Era Blu-ray is fantastic. I recommend everyone get it. If you really want to see it first before you blind buy it, I think it's still on Tubi as we speak. This movie is 11 out of 10.
Don't know if our scale can bear that, but that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I really like this. Obviously, I'm a huge Gamera fan of all the movies. Miles, you can't edit your score to 11. It doesn't go up that high.
I'm breaking the scale.
While I don't think it is perfect by any means, I think it is perfect enough for fans of Gamera. It really does take so many disparate elements from both Showa and Heisei and bundles them together to become something that's a little bit more than the sum of its parts. And the end result is a very rewatchable film. It speeds along. I don't feel like there's a lot of wasted time in it. And like I said, I think it being a standalone movie makes it more watchable. Unlike the trilogy where, you know, yes, the first movie really worked on its own, but I don't ever want to watch just the first movie. Like, I want to be in a mood to kind of go through the Kaneko trilogy. But yeah, I got to the end of this, and just like you, I was like, man, I could just play that again.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to you. I was like, yeah, I might watch this again before we record.
I don't think this is the best kaiju movie in any way, shape, or form, but it's probably the best kids kaiju movie ever. I don't know if there's
not a better kids kaiju movie. This is closest thing kaiju gets to Studio Ghibli.
Yeah, it's what Gamera should be. Well, we might there's an animated Ultraman movie that's coming out that might give it a run.
That's true. Money,
but this one's so. This is definitely the best live action, I think. But yeah, I was waffling between it, but I think I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10 for personal enjoyment. I think I enjoyed watching this. It's too low. I enjoyed watching this as much as some of the Heisei ones, and definitely, I think, top three for rewatchability for me. And that's that, you know, I've given a lot of tens for Gamera films, so
yeah. No, I mean that rewatchability is also a big factor, and a lot of these movies, as good as they are, aren't inherently rewatchable all the time.
No,
there are some, and some of the ones that are maybe not as good as others are still a little bit more rewatchable, like that's the wild thing, is like there's some movies we've watched that I was like, yeah, this movie's not great, but I will watch it any Saturday of the month, you know? The
Showa Gamera ones. There's so many bad Showa Gamera movies, but there's also super rewatchable bits of them, and that's why they are some of the most classic MST3K episodes. They're just very rewatchable. It's a dumb movie, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
absolutely. This is not a dumb movie. This is actually a movie that seems to be taking itself very seriously, but still somehow manages to succeed. You know, that being said, this is not Gamera fans or general movie fans' favorite film, Miles. The general consensus is this is like about 7 out of 10. It's where we're going on your Letterboxd, your IMDb.
Sanity.
Rotten Tomatoes is right there at 70%. That being said, we're not just talking about our personal enjoyment. We're also talking about where we think this stands on a technical aspect. And I think this is probably where the film suffers the most. I think it is both trying to do too much in one movie and maybe just a little. It's also a little too safe at the same time. So much of the movie is set up the trying to get this relationship between Toro and Toto, but I don't really feel the connection between them that I feel like I should in an ET kind of setting, you know, like, I don't know. The effects that are not practical in this movie, I think, can get distractingly bad in parts. Anytime they're just pseudomated monsters, it's so good. But yeah, the writing is pretty great. Maybe some of the acting can be bumped up a little bit, but you know, what are you expecting from this film? But yeah, story-wise, I think this is something very special. And as a anniversary film, it does very well to, I mean, both summarize and now capstone in film form the Showa and Heisei era. Direction pretty clear, very simple. It is not perfect, but as far as Gamera movies go, it's very, very great technical abilities. I'm very nitpicky here, but to say that I'm only giving it a 9 out of 10 as opposed to a perfect, I'm dropping it down. Un point, Miles. Even though, like I said, a lot of this movie, I mean, obviously this is some of like, you know, it reminded me a great deal of, and it was a few years earlier, was, you know, the Rebirth of Mothra movies. Very, very similar to those for Mothra, but this one for Gamera. Those are great kids movies as well. I think this one is definitely better than those movies. But what about you for the technical aspect, Miles?
So I don't know. I disagree. Sorry, I get distracted by something else. I'll tell you in a second.
Oh, it better not be what I think it is.
It is, but on the other side, we are in the midst. We're recording in the midst of the, like, I guess the trenches of the Kendrick Lamar Drake battle, and another lob has been made. This time by one Andre Graham. I think this has some of the best kids in kaiju cinema. I think their relationships feel very real. I think they really do capture that Amblin energy. And because this movie takes itself so seriously, it's such a breath of fresh air compared to a lot of the movies that are aimed towards children. I'm looking at you, Rebirth of Mothra trilogy. So I'm a really big fan of its script, because this movie has a very specific thing it's trying to do, and I think it achieves it. 2006, you know, Japanese special effects, this is about where they were. honestly still looks really, really good. I think they did the most with what they could. This is not a, certainly a, there doesn't feel like they're skimping on anything. I think this is, they were limited by what they was made available to them, and they made the most of it. And I think the script is extremely solid. I think this script gets to the heart of things. It clips along very nicely. I was never really bored. I was always engaged on what was going on. Could they have cut a couple of, you know, 30-second clips of the little turtle moving around? Sure. But it's a really cute turtle, so I'm okay with it. I am going to knock it down a point from what my last one is, so 10 out of 10.
Okay. Pretty funny.
Yeah, no, this delivers everything I could possibly want from. I thought the kid actors are great, and that's honestly a massive compliment at this time. Mm-hmm. And they go a long, long way for me. Like I said, the storytelling that they tell in that first sequence is second to none in kaiju cinema, I think. Mm-hmm. Of the kid just kind of telling us everything with his body language and then switching things on us. There's no way that I don't give all the credit in the world to both the writing and the acting there. So yeah, I'm sticking with the 10.
Okay. And for its importance as a piece of kaiju art, and its importance to the genre, I'm guessing it's going to be a fairly similar score for you. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I kind of gave my answer to this in my personal feelings on this movie. But I think it completely gets to the heart of what Gamera should be and what Gamera can be. And as much as I love the Heisei Gamera movies, it felt like an attempt to it felt like Gamera was doing Godzilla and not Gamera, despite how good those movies are. It felt like Dae was really trying to beat Godzilla at its own game at the time. And, you know,
I mean,
did a good job of it.
There aren't children in the series until Gamera 3, Revenge of Iris. We don't get any actual kids, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, and then even then, they're kind of like homicidal kids.
Little pills, those kids.
So not only that, but I think this is how you do kids kaiju cinema. You go the Spielberg route. You don't just kind of mirror scenes from a Spielberg movie. You take the lessons of the storytelling that Amblin was doing, that Ron Howard was doing, all these guys. Well, I mean, not just Americans, but that kind of storytelling, you take that seriously, and the movie's better as a result. It breaks my heart that this movie failed the box office, because it shouldn't have. This should have been a number one. I mean, we should still have Gamera movies today because of this movie. So if someone wants to, you know, judge a movie by what it contributes to kaiju cinema, this understands the assignment. It makes a great kaiju movie. And I also think it kind of understands the heart of a kaiju movie and delivers that on screen in spades. So yeah, 15 out of 10.
Gotcha. I do agree with you. I think this movie stands out in its importance in a different way that the 90s Gamera films do. I love those for a completely different reason, obviously. They're also great storytelling in a different kind of vein. And this is one that I really do wish had resonated with especially kid audiences a little bit more, because it feels like it is one that is obviously made for them. Wish it was more warmly met by fans today. Hopefully our review can influence that a little bit, nudge the needle, if you will. Because this is the last film, and because it is a great anniversary film, it does what I want it to do, what I want it to be, which is a celebration of Gamera. And because of the action, it feels like it is, you know, able to be enjoyed by fans of the Heisei trilogy. And because of the kids elements and some of the more zaniness of it, I really feel like the 60 to 70 year old kids that grew up on, you know, Showa era Gamera, I guess 50 or 60 at this point, I feel like they can enjoy it as well. There's a lot of heart and soul in the film, the filmmaking. Maybe not quite as perfect as some of the other Heisei movies, but I think this ranks up there with them, and I'm so surprised it doesn't get more love today. I'm giving it a 10 out of 10 for its importance as well. I don't think...
A little low, but all right.
I don't think you could take this out of the kaiju canon and it be the same, because I really do think this occupies the top spot of...
Yeah.
Best kids kaiju movie.
Yeah, this is still legit one of my favorite kaiju movies of all time, and so I'm happy to hear you enjoyed it. I was a little nervous because I remember you saying that you didn't love it the last time you watched it.
The last time I watched it, I was doing a full kind of Gamera watch through because I bought the Arrow set many years ago. And I watched it like almost immediately after Revenge of Iris, which is not a good idea because these movies are very different. And that one is a very different feeling. If you go straight from that one to this one, you might have a bad time. But I remember enjoying it a great deal. It's definitely a mood change. But watching this in the era of the post-millennium series that we are, I think this is great. I think this is beyond great. And it's so funny that a year after the King Kong movie came out in the United States, that Japan is doing a very different film, but both of them had a lot of heart and, you know, added a more human or I guess a more kind of gentle kaiju main character. And the only difference is that one cost like 100 times, 300 times what this movie cost.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, that for me, not a perfect movie. For you, it's apparently beyond perfect. We are both giving it a 10 out of 10. And our podcast final is a 10 out of 10. And this is our third Gamera movie that is getting the full marks from our podcast, a full 10 out of 10, which
that's wild. You know,
I'm not surprised by, because I knew we were going to get back to those Heisei Gamera movies and really, really get into them. But the fact that Gamera has half as many films as Godzilla and almost as many 10 out of 10 films is, you know, just goes to show you that you don't have to necessarily compete completely to be able to be competition for the number one spot in some ways.
Right. And
yeah, they did something with Gamera that deserves its own corner of kind of kaiju films and its own place in kaiju history. I'm so happy we finally got to talk about this movie. It's one that I've wanted to rewatch, but since we started the podcast, I've held off on it because I was like, oh, we're going to get to it and I want it to be kind of fresh then. And I'm glad we did. I did the same thing with the Heisei movies, but I think I broke down at one point and went back and watched Guardian of the Universe. So, but I didn't do that for this one. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Reach out to us, talk all about Gamera. Like I said, we technically have one more piece of Gamera media to talk about that came out last year, 2023, but we're not going to be there for a while. So it's the last Gamera for a while. Talk to us on social medias at Kaiju versus History or email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. Rate and review our show. Share it with your kaiju friends. Join us on our movie watching journey by checking out our letterbox. You can see some of the movies that we're going to be reviewing in the future. Obviously, every kaiju movie. And look at our scores. We got our scores there in 5-star format. Miles, thank you for going down the Gamera route with me here. What are we doing next week?
Well, we are still eating good in the neighborhood, let me tell you. Thank you, Patrick. And thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next week when we cross the sea of Japan for this next film and look at a South Korean filmmaker towards the start of his eventual Oscar-winning career as he gives a look at the monster movie through the lens of a family drama and comedy. That's right. Tune in next time for History versus the Host.